This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I was younger, we used to go out dancing, and, you know, when we were young kids, you know, to the discos and all that. And after a couple of times, I scored a couple of goals and just got a little bit excited and just started doing a little bit of a dance. And they were looking at Sheffield Wednesday behind the goal, which was a nice goal. And then it just began to take off a little bit like that.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast discussing Ipswich Town up or down since 2015. I'm Richard Woodard, and joining me for another collaboration interview with our friends at TWTD, the king of definite info, Phil Ham. And we're delighted to welcome one-time top flight striker, a guy who made 346 career appearances, scoring 86 goals, enjoying playing spells obviously in England, but France, Malaysia, Denmark, and has since become a coach with Ipswich, with Notts County, and since 2021, the head coach of the British Virgin Islands. Welcome in his British Virgin Islands orange shirt, glowing at the room, Chris Kiwomia. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm very good.
Good stuff. And Phil, welcome back. Great to have you with us as well. You doing all right? This busy time of year for you, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, it's all gone a bit fallow, hasn't it, on the transfer front at the moment. But I'm sure it'll all take off again very soon.
Kick into gear. Well, Chris, we'll be talking about your playing career and certainly interested to see how you're getting on at the British Virgin Islands and more bits and pieces like that. Phil, I'll hand over to you.
Yes, well, I think the best place to start, Chris, is the very beginning. And a tournament at Shotley, I think, was kind of where you first kind of caught the eye.
Yeah, yeah. I'd been scouted up north for Leeds and the scout at the time, Tony Forthrop, who ended up down at Bristol, recommended to Ipswich. He didn't want me to go, since he was leaving Leeds, he didn't want me to sign for Leeds. So he recommended me to a scout who was down at Ipswich. And I ended up coming down there, and they went, you know, I went for a trial, and they invited me back to play in the Shotley tournament. And it was just one of those bizarre situations where I was sub at the time. You know, they were playing all the players that they were going to give, you know, contracts to, YTS's apprenticeship contracts to. And I was begging Peter Vivian, who was the youth team manager at the time, to put me on, I'll do something, I'll try and score. You know, I just had that confidence at the time that I wanted to really have my opportunity. Unfortunately, just as Pete put me on, Bobby Ferguson, the then first team manager, was walking across the pitch and stuck his umbrella to zip up his jacket, and the ball came across, went over my head, and I just, you know, threw my leg at it, and just the ball ended up in the top corner. And it's like Bobby Ferguson was like, wow, who is that? You know, we need to sign him. And then it obviously just went onwards from there.
So that was, you were 16 at that point?
16, yeah, around about 1986, yeah. And about a time just starting down there. So just a really, you know, important time for me. And I think, you know, those sliding door moments that can happen in life where, you know, opportunity comes, opportunity knocks, and you've got to try and grab it.
So it's a big move for you from Bradford to Ipswich at 16.
Yeah, you know, listen, there was teams I could have signed for up north, you know, Leeds, Huddersfield, and, you know, the Sheffield Wednesday. There was teams interested at the time. But, you know, I wanted to come down south and test myself against in the southeast counties, as it was at the time, against the Chelseas, the Arsenals, and the Tottenhams, and just to see how good I was. But I think more importantly, coming down to the ground, I remember seeing, you know, a lot of young players in the team. Mark Brennan was in the team, in the first team at the time, and, you know, Jason was in the team, and Michael Cole and Daly and Atkinson, they were all getting opportunities. And I just thought, wow, this is a breeding ground for young players to get opportunities. And I think as well, what was really important, it was like, you know, it was a family-fied club. Really, you know, people looked after you. You felt as everybody spoke with you, everybody welcomed you. And that was a special feeling that Ipswich had at the time. And I really wanted to be part of that.
Mm. And you mentioned Jason. I gather you were on the bench at 16 and he was a bit concerned at quite how old you, how, you know, 16 and how many days, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was something like that. You know, I've been called up to the Leicester game by Bobby Ferguson. I'd been doing well. And, you know, we had Mishtav Ray and Ian Cranton, all those players were in the team at the time. And I remember Jason, you know, in the pre-match, Jason calling me, you know, looking across at me and saying, you could see his mind ticking away. And he was counting on his fingers, I think he was. And he said to me, how old are you? And I'm like, you know, 16 or whatever. He goes, that's a nah, you're all right, Jason. Your title's going to be there for a long time yet. So he just started giggling.
I don't think anyone's going to take that record, are they?
No.
So Bobby Ferguson was the manager. Hard taskmaster from what I've heard from other players over the years.
Yeah, it could be. But I love playing for him, you know. He did put pressure on players. If you didn't, you always knew where you stood with him, you know. If you hadn't played well, he'd come in and let you know in certain terms, you know. But, you know, I wasn't a shrinking violet. I was like, okay. He said, you know, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. And he could be aggressive in his approach. But you just have to kind of dust yourself down. And I think what was hard, I think, you know, when you leave home at 16 and you're staying in the digs and staying with a family, and I had a really nice family up on Britannia Road there, you know, you just come back to your room. You know, you know, there was no mobile phones back in the day. So it was off to the telephone box, put 20 pence in or 50 pence, whatever it was, speak to your mum, speak to your brothers, and then go back in the next day and dust yourself down. Well, I think local players that were living locally could go home and have their home comforts and, you know, speak to everybody face to face. So that kind of toughened me up a little bit as well. You know, you had to kind of, you know, rise to the challenges that were put ahead of you. But I like Bobby Ferguson. He was a great football coach. You know, his sessions were always interesting. You know, and he'd worked under Bobby Robson, so obviously, and Charlie Wood. So, you know, they were a good team. But like you say, it was a hard taskmaster and not everybody's cup of tea, but, you know, definitely my cup of tea. You know, it was good for me.
And then after him came John Duncan. What was he like to work under?
Yeah, John was different. John came in and, you know, the club was going through a transition. Obviously, you know, we'd gone down to Division Two and, you know, it taken over from Bobby Ferguson. And I, you know, he was another one. I can always remember, though, one thing. You know, we sold Darren Atkinson to Sheffield Wednesday and he wrote in the paper, I'm not too bothered, really, because, you know, I've got a young player coming through who's going to replace him. And I think he's just as good as he's got the talent to be just as good as Darren. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, this manager thinks I can be as good as him. Darren at the time, coming to the first team and was unbelievable. He's got a hat-trick against Middlesbrough, being called up to England under 20s. But John, you know, saying that gave me so much confidence. And I think football, you know, 70% of it is about confidence and being able to, you know, go onto the pitch and express yourself. And that's what he did. He gave me the confidence and he gave me opportunities. He gave me my debut. And I'll always be thankful for that, really, because, you know, he's a good manager who showed a lot of trust in me.
And then John Lyle, 1991, 14th in the division. But he told you in sort of ahead of the end of that season, he told you we were going to get promoted the next year, didn't he?
Yeah, I was ready to jump in my car and drive back up north. And I think, as you say, we finished 14th. It wasn't a great year. But, you know, for every manager, you need two or three transfer windows or, you know, you need to have that time to put your stamp of approval on a team. And I remember being in the room with him and he was like, you know, what do you think of the season? I thought, well, it's gone. All right. I could have been better. It's got a few goals. I'm feeling, you know, he said, like, we'll go up next season. And I was like, really? He says, yeah, we'll go up next season. I know what we've got to do. I know what we've got now. And I know what we have to bring in, and, you know, to change the dynamics to make as a team, you know, that can challenge. And I remember jumping in my car and driving up north thinking, this guy's in cuckoo land. I can't see us. You know, I can't see us really challenging the top boys next season. But, you know, here was a manager that had been at West Ham for years. You know, had Ron Greenwood as his mentor, really top manager and a top footballing coach. But more importantly, John had worked under some of the best players in England with Trevor Brooking, Frank Lampard Sr., you know, Alan Devonshire, Billy Bonds, Alvin Martin. You can go through the names, Frank McAvenny, Tony Cotty. You know, you could go through the names. So he'd had a lot of experience and he knew football inside out.
And he was, you've said to me before that if you'd have met him earlier in your career, you would have been a better player for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, definitely. Because he was, you know, it's, you know, some of the things he did, like, so when he came in, he would put on training sessions where I had to be able to play one, two or three touches, not run with the ball, which was I thought was my strength at the time, my running. But he said, no, that'll take care of itself. And then he would then say, okay, you know, your second touch has to be forward. So if I ever came off flat and I couldn't see where the defenders were, I couldn't pass forward. So he would put conditions on in training, which would make me come off on angles and being able to just understand the game a lot more. And, you know, him coming to the club just changed the whole outlook. And I always kind of say to my children and to other people, it's funny because if you hadn't come in, maybe I would never have gone on and achieved some of the stuff that I achieved in the game. And it's like that maths teacher at school. If that maths teacher doesn't get on with you in the lesson and you're good at maths, you might not ever get, you know, fulfill your capability of being really good in life at, you know, at mathematics or something that leads with mathematics in it. So, you know, being with Johnny, he was brilliant. We could go to Old Trafford and, you know, I think this was 1992, 93. He would play with no strikers. He'd play like with me and Paul Goddard in between the fullbacks. And I remember him saying we want Gary Pallister and Steve Bruce to come down the middle of the pitch with the ball. So, you know, and now we've obviously got Pep Guardiola playing with a false nine, false 10 and all these things. But, you know, football's the same. It's just a little bit different, you know what I mean? And, you know, matched up a little bit differently. But he always had a plan. And I always tend to think with managers like that, you know, when you've got the best players, it's how you handle the best players, because a lot of them are good players, top class players, you know, so you got to understand the personalities. When you've got a lesser group of talented team, how do you get the best out of them? How do you go to Old Trafford and get a result? You know what I mean? How do you adapt to the teams you're playing against? You know what I mean? How can you make every player in your team 20% better? And I think that's what he did with that promotion team. Every player from Neil Thompson, Phil Whelan, you know, myself, Jason, you know, John Walker was experienced, who came in, Steve Palmer, Simon Milton. He made every player 20% better, and he got a good camaraderie with the team. And we were good friends on the pitch and off the pitch, and we were able to go on great runs. You know, I think in that 92 season when we went up, we went on two runs after Christmas, and, you know, in January and in March, around that time, when we won five on the bounce. Just big momentum swings, you know, gives you the confidence, and it just gives you the momentum to get over the line.
Rich?
Yeah, well, let's talk about this 91-92 team, because I get, as a member of that team, and it feels like sometimes that success of that squad was maybe underestimated in comparison to what happened in 99-2000 and obviously Wembley. Do you get that sense? Do you think that team is maybe underappreciated for the quality that it had?
I don't know about underappreciated, maybe not spoken about as much, you know, but I think people who were there, you know, those were exciting years, you know, especially those 2 years when we went up, and then the first year in the Premier League was so exciting. You know, we was out on the town going up to Hollywood and all the bars and all the clubs, and you know what I mean? And it was just a great feeling. But, you know, that 99 team was probably, you know, player to player, probably better than us, you know, I would say, you know, but we would, I don't know, I think we'd have found a good game. I think we'd have beaten them. I think we would have found a way to get, you know, to win the game, because we could do that with the tactical nous of John and just adapting to playing against teams. But, you know, all you can do as a player is do your best at the time, and, you know, you leave memories with, you know, with supporters. And I know that when I'm about in the town or going around, and even when I'm abroad and people remind me of Ipswich, I'm always renowned. Oh, I remember you at Ipswich. Those years were great years. So, you know, I think every supporter will have memories of each player, each season, and what years were the great years for them, you know. And we just have to know that we played a part in a successful period of Ipswich Town Football Club, which, you know, if you'd have said to me, leaving home at 16, I'd be part of a team that would win promotion to the Premier League and we could beat Manchester United and do things like that. Those are great feelings that you would always remember. So, you know, it's not so much about what the supporters think. It's what about how you feel that you've done and the memories that they have for you.
Yeah, and everyone has their team, their Ipswich team growing up, don't they, as well?
Absolutely.
What was the key, or who were the key kind of players in that squad to bring the best out of you? I think it was a 19-goal season in all comps, I think 16 in the league. You mentioned Paul Goddard. We mentioned briefly Jason as well. But how important were they to bring out the best in you?
Really, really important. You know, and that's what I'm saying. I think John added Steve Whitten. You know, added Steve Whitten to the team on the right wing. You know, very underestimated player, two-footed. You know, great way to pass, you know, and always available to take the ball. But I think the main combination was myself, Jason and Paul Goddard, you know. And, you know, but then again, at the back, you had John Walk and David Linegan. That was a good combination as well. So that was really important. In the middle, you had Simon Milton, who played a prominent role, scored big, important goals. So we had a little blend of everything. But for the best for me was Jason. And I think the main reason, and even becoming a coach, you know, you realise that when these guys, you know, they could find pockets of holes, but when they played, when they got on the ball, they played forward passes. So, you know, 9 times out of 10, they would always turn and, can I play a ball behind the space, or can I play? And that was very important for myself, playing on the shoulder against defenders, you know, when the spaces were there. But even then, just playing, you know, coming off and get them coming into those positions caused problems for many teams. They call it playing in between the lines now and make all these fancy words up for it. But, you know, the players have been doing that for, you know, for decades. You know, Eric Gates did it, didn't he, for Ipswich in the 70s and 80s. You know, he was coming off into pockets and they couldn't handle that.
Yeah. I mean, plenty of moments throughout this season where your goals kind of have the key contribution. You know, you mentioned those runs after Christmas. We'll talk about towards the end of the season, but I do want to talk about the cup run, the FA Cup run that season. We spoke to Simon Milton and I asked him about how it felt. Was that a confidence boost or was it a distraction? And he kind of felt it gave you guys confidence. Did you sense that, you know, going and playing at places like Anfield was great preparation for what was to follow the season after, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. You know, taking Liverpool to extra time in 2 games at the time showed how far we'd come as a team. You know, and really I thought the best opportunity was we could have tried to beat him. We're down at our place. It was a really windy day, I always remember. I had a probably half chance at one stage, and John Walk, you know, Walk hit the crossbar, I believe it was, with a header. You know, so those opportunities that you've got to take. Going up to Anfield was just an awesome night. You know, it was a good game, and, you know, you never forget, you know, Jason got the 2-2. Gavin's got a great header. Kevin Johnson's got a great header. And, you know, but then on the day, they had Jan Morbis going there. Unbelievable free kick. And Steve McManaman, at the time, went on to be obviously a world-class player, you know, scoring a great goal. So it was a great, you know, but like I said, those are the runs that give you the confidence. Then you get on the coach coming back and going, hey, we've just gone toe-to-toe with Liverpool there, really, you know. And although it's in the cup, it just gives you a confidence booster. And then, you know, towards the end of the season, you can just take it on from there.
Yeah, so, I mean, you talked about the momentum runs, but it's fair to say there were a few wobbles towards the end. You know, there's a great game against Newcastle. Do you score the winner against Newcastle? Now 3-2. Yeah.
They were my lucky team with Newcastle. I think I scored against them 5 or 6 times. You know, so, you know, that was a really great game. But I remember thinking of them because, you know, Kevin Keegan had just taken over. The momentum was with them. They brought down the whole fans. And Gavin Peacock, who I went to play with, I ended up playing with at Queen's Park Rangers. He mentioned the game all the time because he's got 2 great goals. But, you know, getting that 3-2 win was really important. And me scoring the winner was, you know, really great at the time because it was a full house. And, you know, yeah, we won that game and then we were on a little bit of a wobble. But I just think at the time, you know, I mean, it's always hard. It was the first time we've been in that position and we just had to try to get over the line. A few late nights after that Newcastle game probably didn't help as well. But, you know, we managed to do it in the end at Oxford.
Yeah, and some great memories, some, you know, fans on the pitch, which is kind of, you know, it's what we love. And big moments, the home game against Brighton, obviously getting the trophy. You know, talk to us about that. And that's kind of what footballers must dream of.
Well, it is, you know, one of my favourite pictures is I've got the picture I was looking at the other day, really. It's, we played against Newcastle when I scored the winner, and one of the fans, you know, one or two of the fans run on the pitch and are hugging me.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, it means so much to those fans, and you know that fan is in my living room all the time. So you know what I mean. He doesn't even know that, but you know it just shows the emotion that was in the town at the time, and and the victory, you know what I mean? You know, going up against Kevin Keegan's team, who had some good players, and getting the victory to try and get us closer to, you know, winning the title. And as you say, you know, winning the last game at Brighton at home, you know, was good. You know, we paraded the trophy before the game. So it kind of tells you, you know, how relaxed we were. You know, normally we'd probably do it after the game, but we did it before the game and went on to win the game. I think we won 3-1 in the end. And it was just a great day. We had our player of the year do after, you know, and then I think the parade of the bus around it, which was another story as well. So everything just, you know, falling into place at the right time.
Yeah, I have to ask you about the infamous suit as well from the bus parade. A particularly fashionable choice there. Was it a lilac suit?
Lilac suit, it was that. Yeah. It wasn't pink, it was a lilac suit, yeah. So actually, I went and spent a little bit of money over in Colchester, you know, to get the suit. Where I would wear that now, I probably still got it.
Nice.
In the wardrobe. I don't know if I could wear it. I think I might have worn it to a fancy dress a few years later. But yeah, listen, it was a bit brave, but it was summer. You know, there's people like Phil Whelan and Frank Yellett wearing black suits. Just won the league, man. Come on. You've got to liven up a little bit, you know what I mean? Show your character. Mind you, that was their character, Phil Whelan. So I thought I'd liven it up and have a bit of fun on the day.
Great days. Good.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Phil.
And of course, the song. The Que Will Me Up, My Lord. I mean, that, I can remember that floating around the ground. I mean, that must feel terrific, doesn't it?
Iconic. It was crazy because obviously, you know, Come By Our My Lord is a Christian song that they sing. And I remember, I think it was a West Ham, you know, I used to warm up when I was like, you know, just getting into the team when I was 17. And there'd be 5 or 6 guys saying, Come By Our My Lord, Que Will Me Up. And I remember looking, going, oh, that's a nice little catchy rhyme. And then the North Stand got hold of it. And then it was, you know, it was just brilliant. You know what I mean? I think there were some games, you know, you just run out there, you score, and they'll be singing your name, you know. And I remember going abroad and, you know, you're bumping the fans and they go, oh, they sing that song about you. So it's just, listen, just really good memories and, you know, really special. I had a really, you know, special relationship with Ipswich Town fans. They were really good to me and, you know, I was saying to my son the other day, if I had my chance to, you know, to do it all again, what team would I choose to, you know, to start my career with? Ipswich all every day, Ipswich.
Mm. Wasn't it, it's not just in the ground though, wasn't there a story about in the station?
We played against Sheffield Wednesday and we, you know, I brought my mum and all my family came down because it was in Sheffield. You know, being a Yorkshire lad, it was a special game for me. Leeds and Sheffield Wednesday were always special games for myself. And I think David Erskine put them 1-0 up and then I scored a nice little cheeky goal. And then I was taking my mum and my brother back to the train station at Sheffield and dropping them off. And when we got all the Ipswich fans were on the other platform ready to head south while my mum was going north, and there must have been about 200, 300 just singing the song in the train station and my mum was nearly crying. So probably one of the special moments where my mum kind of thinks, oh, he's doing okay. He's doing all right. I think somebody likes him. so, really nice.
So we win the second division, the old second division as it was, into the first year of the Premier League. That must have increased your profile as a footballer enormously.
It did. There was challenges. I remember being on the plane and me and Jason sitting together coming back, and you know, we looked at the fixture list. It was, I think we went to Finland or somewhere in pre-season, or Sweden or somewhere. And I remember saying, God, we've got Manchester United, and we've got Liverpool, and then we've got Tottenham. And I remember thinking, God, and I remember going, I don't know where our first win's going to come from. And Frank Yellick was over here, and he says, how about where our first shot's going to come from? So it was just so funny at the time, because, you know, all of a sudden you're in the real world thinking, wow, there's no easy games. You know what I mean? There's no, you know, in your first six games, you could have, you know, Tottenham away, you know, Chelsea or at home, or Liverpool or Manchester United. You know, Aston Villa, who were a top team at the time, you know, so they're all difficult games. So you're kind of going, wow, this is what it's like. You know, it's not as though you're going to go to Bristol City away. No disrespect to Bristol City. So it's kind of like, oh, wow, you know, you've got to be up for it. I remember that pre-season really getting my head down. I wanted to get off to a good start. And I ended up going against Liverpool and Manchester United in consecutive games. So that gave me a bit of confidence. But it was really hard. It's really hard because you come up against really top-class defenders. Week in, if it's not Tony Adams 1 week, and then, you know, it'd be Gary Pallister or Steve Bruce the next week. So you had to be on your game, and you had to be. I always remember thinking, though, what kind of goals, you know, you might have to get rebounds off the goalkeepers as well as the individual goals. Got to try and sniff out as many goals as possible, you know, from corners, from set pieces. You know, they were really, really important.
I mean, yes, you say, yeah, you were kind of worried about the start, but 1-1 draw with Aston Villa on the opening day with. Dalian Atkinson, the great Dalian Atkinson, scoring the equaliser for Villa. 1-0 win away at Wimbledon. So that's only second game. It didn't take long for that first win to come, did it? And then 1-1 draw with Man United, 2-2 draw with Liverpool, 1-1 draw with Tottenham. So, you know, you made a very decent start, really, didn't you?
I think so. And sometimes, you know, that's a good question, and teams understand that. Sometimes it's really good to play those teams early. You know what I mean? Because they're not in the stride yet. You don't really look at the table until your first 10 games. That gives you a little picture of where you're at. You know what I mean? So getting those teams early before they're in the stride and up and running. You know, some players haven't hit form. Some players are not fit yet. You know, team managers haven't got the best team yet. Haven't sussed out the best teams. We knew our team. So, you know, getting those results early gives us a little bit of confidence. And I think we ended up doing really well. And when we beat Manchester United, I think it was around the end of January, we were something like fifth or sixth in the table. You know, and then once again, you know, it got a lot harder because teams begin to know who your danger players are. They've seen you play for 4 or 5 months now. They know your patterns of play, and they kind of are able to stop you, you know. So there's all those things that come into it, you know. So, you know, once again, it got difficult towards the end of the season, but we managed to get over the line again and stay up again.
Which, of course, was probably the aim at the start of the season more than anything else, wasn't it, to stay up? So there must be plenty of memories. Obviously, beat Leeds 4-2 at Foreman Road. And they were the champions at the time, weren't they?
There was. And what a team they had. David Batty was a good player. Eric Cantona was there with his collars up. They had Gary McAllister, Gary Speed, God bless him. Really, you know, some really good players, you know what I mean? Chris White, David Fairclough, Chris Fairclough. There were so many players there that were difficult, you know, to play against. And I think they played in the Champions League the week before, but that game, you know, that day was another special day. You know, I scored, I think Jason scored, and Walker got a couple as well. So, you know, we were showing that, you know, we were there on our own right, on our own merits, and we could mix it with those boys at the time, you know. Everybody was playing with each other, and we had a really great confidence. You know, we beat Leeds, we ended up beating Manchester United. So it wasn't no fluke while we were doing these things at the time.
I mean, it must be pretty special scoring at Old Trafford. Do you pinch yourself when you're sort of, when you're in the corner doing your dance, you're sort of pinching yourself thinking, bloody hell, I'm at Old Trafford?
Well, that's what I thought at the time, but I was so gutted because they were doing the rebuild of the stand, the Stretford end at the time. So you've got one guy with his cap doing a little bit of work with his worker's cap on. And, you know, but listen, I was, you know, there's another thing. I'm getting on the coach going, you know, going back down south after to Ipswich. And I'm thinking to myself, if you told me when I was growing up, I'd be able to score at Old Trafford. It's another, you know, it's another something, you know, that I'd be really proud of, you know, especially with the players that they had on the pitch at the time. You know, they had good players, Incy and, you know, Ryan Giggs, certain players like that. So just once again, like a milestone ticked off in my box, but something for Ipswich to be proud of. You know, we're now going to Old Trafford and getting 1-1s.
And winning at Norwich, that's another a big day for you as well, the derby victory at Carrow Road.
Always lovely to beat Norwich, you know, and I think that was a big game built. It was live on Sky, and I remember, you know, they had a good team. Norwich had a good team in those days with Megson and Rule Fox. You know, I think Chris Sutton was around there at the time. You know, they had a really good team. You know, Jeremy Goss, you know what I mean? So they were a good team. And that was a big game for us, really. We had to, you know, we had to go up that day and we wanted the victory for the fans, you know, because it was live on Sky. It's first time we've been back, you know, in the Premier League, you know, the newly formed Premier League. And to score the first goal and you know, was so important, which I happily took. And then Neil Thompson scoring right at the end to just sign off. I remember coming back to Ipswich, we had a really good night out, or you know what I mean, again, and really, really enjoyed the moment.
So that season is you've 19 goals in all competitions. As you say, the team, the sort of performances slipped away towards the end, but you got over the line. Any interest in you in that close season, having kind of, you know, established yourself really as a Premier League striker, or at least shown that you could cope with the level?
Absolutely. But I know for a fact there was interest from teams. But, you know, John was, John Lau was like a father figure to me. Really good, you know, on and off the pitch. He guided me and, you know, so, and I knew that there was, you always had interest from different agents calling you up and everything. But I was quite happy at Ipswich. You know, what always worried me is, you know, we didn't have a lot of money anyway, did we? So, you know, how, you've got to always try to keep improving the team each year. You know, be it one or two players, no matter what club you're at. Or fresh faces, you know, to do that. So that always kind of, but at the time, I was 22, something like that. So I wasn't particularly bothered about who we're bringing in. What I was particularly bothered about is, you know, could I keep going? Could we keep the team together? And could I, you know, could I do just as well? I know it's always going to be hard in the second year. Could I do just as well in the second year?
Rich?
Yeah, well, the kind of change in personnel for the next season is kind of an important part of the story for your season for followed, isn't it? Because Jason departs for Spurs,
yeah,
and that's obviously a creative partner there that you've relied on. And Ian Marshall comes in as well, and a bit of a change of style, perhaps, that didn't suit you, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, Paul Goddard and I mentioned, and Jason were instrumental in a lot of my goals, and you know, and the way we played. You know, we brought in Ian Marshall. I thought, you know, listen, Ian Marshall was a really, really good striker, very mobile, very good finisher, you know, but I thought I know we became more direct, more, you know, in the midfield, get it wide, get it in the box. You know, I wasn't a 6'2" centre forward that was going to score loads of headers. So it was always going to be a little bit more difficult. And also, you know, teams, you know, suss you out. They know how you like to play. They know who the players are that can handle the ball in midfield. And, you know, we were playing basically a 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1, if you want to call it. But with me and Marshall, it was 4-4-2, you know, so there was nobody coming off. And it got a little bit direct. I probably, you know, and I struggled a little bit, but, you know, I was still dangerous. I was still looking. And Johnny should say, you just got to try and keep on going, try and find. But, you know, with the change in personnel, it didn't really suit me as much as how we had to play, because now, we weren't playing as much football as we had in the previous year and were a little bit more direct, which really probably didn't suit me, you know. So I never flourished in the years after that, really, as much as I could have done. You know, we did bring in, you know, Paul Mason was a good addition, you know, good feet, but, you know, but it wasn't the team. It wasn't the same attacking movements that we had the previous 2 years.
And your game, probably a lot of people remember for just the pace they're getting in behind, but your hold up play, and I think was it 91-92, there's a load of assists in that season for you as well. Was developing that part of the game important for you as well, those seasons too?
I think it was. I think it's really important. John used to mention, you know, we've got to start off from the back when we're building up first. So you've got to get more involved in the in the hold-up play. But there were little things like that. Paul Goddard was really good at things like that. You know, I remember him, he didn't play in one game. He was injured. And he said, I'm gonna sit in the stand. I'm going to write down how many times when the ball comes up to you, you give it to us, and how many times you give it to them. And that's what he said. He said, I'm going to write down how many times you give it to us and you give it to them. So I remember being on the pitch thinking, got to give it to us. And I had the ball, give it to us. And after the game, he said, well done. Well done. He said, you hold up play. Because when teams are coming to look at you, they're not just looking at your strengths, looking at your weaknesses as well. So if you're, you know, if your weakness in holding the ball is, you know, if you're a 3 out of 10, you've got to get up to a 6. So you've got to give us the ball, you know, 7, 8 times out of 10, you know, not giving us it, you know, 3 out of 10. So there's all those little things that were really important. So, and like you say, I've got my son now who goes through all videos and looks at stuff, and he goes, do you know when you scored 19 goals, Dad, that you got 10 assists? I was like, no, did I? So I said, that'd be pretty decent in today's market, wouldn't it? He said, yeah, yeah. You know, if you look at the Premier League now, it's so competitive. It is so hard. You know, defenders are better. You know, defenders, a lot of them are athletes. They understand the game. There's low blocks going on, or defending deeper, whatever you want to call it, you know, going on the game. So if you get 10 goals a season in the Premier League now, you've had a good season. You know, with a lot of the teams, it's only the top teams, you know what I mean, that are playing at the Manchester Cities that are getting the 22 goals or 20 goals a season. You look at the top, you know, I think Richarlison at Everton got 10 goals this season. And I think a lot of them came in the last 2 months of the season, 3 months of the season. So it just goes to show you how the game has changed and how much more difficult it is now.
Yeah. And as you say, the difficulty of the game, you mentioned it before there, kind of from 93, 94, staying up on the last day against Blackburn. Maybe as supporters, alarm bells perhaps ringing for us about how we stayed up and what we'd do about that in 94, 95. And really, as players, did you think we did enough in that 94, 95 season? Or maybe was the Premier League and all the money starting to get away from us a little bit?
Yeah, it was getting away. And I think there's only so much you could do. You know, John, I think John was looking to more move upstairs as well. And I think he tried to do it towards the end when he was at Ipswich and gave the reins to Mick McGivern and John Walk and Paul Goddard. You know, when there's no influx of money coming in, you know, you can only get so fast, you know, sometimes. And they're taking the money for Jason. And I know that they turned down money from other clubs for myself at the time. So you're just wondering how you want. I was out of contract and it was difficult. You know, I remember thinking to myself, you know, I've been here 9 years now. I'm not around the corner. And I think, you know, John left in December 94, you know, and then it was kind of like he was my mentor. He was like a father figure to me. And then that's when I began to really think, well, look, listen, I don't know what's going to happen. And George Burley came in and I got on really well with George. You know, I could see he had good ideas and he was going to be a good coach for us. But I just, you know, when Arsenal came knocking on the door and George said to me, look, you can go speak with him, but come back and we'll sort something out. I'm like, you don't let somebody go down to Arsenal and see the marble floors and then kind of and see the and meet the players. And, you know, I remember getting down there and they're saying, look, you know, if you sign before Thursday at 12, you know, we can put you into the Cup Winners' Cup, what it was called at the time, you know. So it was like, oh, wow, you know, this is a done deal. So I had my medical on the Wednesday and it was done deal by the Thursday.
Yeah, well, Phil will talk about that in a second. Just before we, two bits before we leave the Ipswich questions, I need to talk to you about the Kiwamia Wiggle. Phil briefly mentioned it, but we need to hear about that. I'm sure there are people kind of, we're kind of half an hour in or so, we haven't heard about that. Where did that come from?
Listen, you know, it's just one of those silly, I cringe now when my, you know, my children mention it to me, by the way, and they start showing me a few on the old videos. No, listen, when I was younger, we used to go out dancing, and, you know, when we were young kids, you know, to the discos and all that. And I think a couple of times I scored a couple of goals and just got a little bit excited and just started doing a little bit of a dance. And there was a little one at Sheffield Wednesday behind the goal, which was a nice goal. And then it just began to take off a little bit like that. Listen, I look back now and it was embarrassing, but you know what? Good fun at the time. And, you know, it gave the fans something to laugh and giggle about as well.
We all love that, definitely. And finally, in terms of player perspectives and moving from 93-94 to 94-95, you mentioned the kind of upheaval off the pitch as well. You know, John Lyle moves into a kind of a director of football kind of role. Mick McGivern comes in. There's kind of protests at the end of the 93-94 season. And then obviously George comes in, very inexperienced that time. Just as a player, talk to us about how that uncertainty or how you guys react to that as players and what that gives you in terms of confidence and your mindset.
Well, it's difficult for the players because really sometimes you've had a manager that has taken us to a good heights and created so many memories in the town, but you can see it's beginning to, you know, it's beginning to lose its shine a little bit, you know, for what, you know, for the, no money coming in. You know, no expenditure on players, which can't really afford to do. You know, have players been there too long and are the players good enough? You know, once you get to a level, the hardest thing in football is to maintain. You know, anybody can win the league once. And this is why Manchester United were so good in the 90s. They didn't want to let go. You know what I mean? So when they won the league, they had to win it again. They wanted to win it three times on the bounce, you know. And that's the hardest thing for anybody can win a league once. Or you look at even tennis now, these tennis players, you know, you know, they're winning, you know, 20 grand slams, 22 grand slams. The level's just gone up. They're not happy with 4, 5, 6, 7. They keep on pushing each other. I think a little bit we'd hit the ceiling and we just couldn't maintain it no more. And like you say, the Premier League was getting more and more. Money was going up. All of a sudden, the record fee was going 7 million for Andy Cole as a striker. You know, I mean, Alan Shearer then moves later on, you know, he moves for 15 million. You know, but we're still down in that low where we spend £1 million on Steve Sedgley, which is the record at the time, you know, and it's kind of like, well, that's just one player, you know, and is he going to be, he's not something he's going to open up the, you know, he was a really good player with Steve, with Sedge, but you know what I mean? You need creative players in wide areas, you know. So what I would say to you, when we played in 92, I remember going to Arsenal, and they're saying, well, one of George's plans was, if we get all the Kiwami and Dazelle, we kind of like won the game. We can win the game. That's what their thing was. So if us two are out of the game, who else is going to now grab the game by the throat and make something happen? You know, sometimes in a good team, if two players are quiet, another two need to stand up and take hold of the game. And those were the little things, really. So I spoke to Mervyn Day, who was a scout of Brighton. I had a lot of respect to Mervyn. I tried to bring him in at Notts County, couldn't bring him in. I said, Mervyn, tell me about Grealish. I want him. I think I can get him. He's at Villa in the youth team. He's a bit slight, but he's the kind of player that I like. He's slight. He can dribble. You know what I mean? He's courageous. Mervyn went, just give me 2 minutes. Let me go into my file. I said, Chris, take him.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.